IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. Welcome back to Shooting Space, my podcast where I talk about lacrosse, what's happening in the game, talk to some amazing, amazing people within the game of lacrosse. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Amari Pollard. We got her in the house, and we're joined by a really, really special guest. We're joined by Katie Hood, who is the CEO of the One Love Foundation. Katie, thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh, so thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Of course, of course. You know, and as I mentioned before, we started chatting. You know, sad that the topic that brings us together is something that affects so many people, you know, most times behind closed doors. But I'm grateful that we're all gathering on this platform to talk about how we help each other, how we help others, and, you know, how we ourselves can move towards healthy relationships and things of that sort.
Yeah, it sounds overly simplistic, but to be perfectly honest, the more we talk about it, the more we actually are doing to normalize that discussion. Mm-hmm. And part of what has allowed, you know, domestic violence and abuse to flourish is it's an issue nobody knows how to talk about. So I think, like, while it can be uncomfortable and it's certainly not a happy topic to talk about, talking about it is actually one of the most important things you can do.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. If you can you give a little bit of background about One Love for those that may not know how the foundation came about?
Sure. One Love was started out of a tragedy, which was the death of Yardley Love in 2010. She was a varsity lacrosse player at the University of Virginia. And her ex-boyfriend, who was also a player on the men's team at Virginia, killed her. Her family, well, I'll start with my story. So I'm a friend of her cousin's who also played lacrosse, but like 15 years earlier at Yale. And I got a call that morning saying, you need to go to Sharon's house because her cousin's been killed. And in the, you know, minutes it took me to get to her house, you could have told me anything under the sun, except that this girl who was 3 weeks away from graduation would have been killed by a classmate at the University of Virginia in the way that she was. But having been there that day, I am glad I was there that day, because I think when we see these stories, if you start paying attention, these stories are in the news all the time. But if it's not personal to you, I think you tend to like look the other way. You don't want to know about it. And I think when we do see them, we think, well, somebody must have known something. Like, this must have been like a really, really bad situation, because that helps us feel safe. But the truth is, nobody in Yardley's life understood the risk that she was in. This was not that her parents hadn't had this concern or her family hadn't had this concern. They knew she was in an up and down relationship. They knew there was some drama. They knew she was excited to be moving on. But the idea that she could be killed was not even part of anybody's reality. And yet, as time passed and they learned more, they really recognized that if a domestic violence expert had been dropped into the middle of that friend group, they would have understood the signs. They would have understood it was a more dangerous situation, and they would have known where to go for help. So her mother had this brilliant idea, quite honestly, of like, how do we provide that information? We have an information gap here. If young people know the signs and they know where to go to help, and we can normalize them talking about this with each other, then they can be a front line that doesn't exist today. So that's the whole vision for the prevention education we want to do. It's really about educating friends, empowering friends, and giving people the information they need to speak up if help is needed. Yeah. So basically I was a friend of the family advising them on the side. Her mom actually started the foundation in 2010, but they weren't really sure what they were going to do. Actually, at first they funded lacrosse programs for urban youth because they love lacrosse. Yardley loved lacrosse. She only wanted to play for UVA. It was a huge part of her identity. She loved her team. So that's where they started. But as they realized this opportunity, they really moved into the education space. In 2014, they had created a film called Escalation, which showed an abusive relationship from the very beginning, when, by the way, it's not abusive at the beginning. You know, that's newsflash. If somebody was abusive to you on the first date, you would not have a second date. It sneaks up on you and it starts with emotional abuse, and that's very poorly understood. And then that can escalate into other forms of violence. And when I saw this film they created, because Sharon Love also, I mean, quite brilliant, she didn't want to lecture young people. She wanted to talk to them in a language they could hear. And she realized that film was really that medium. So they created this film and were like, what do we do with it? And I was like, you need to hire a CEO and take this to every kid in this country. Because when I watched the film, I realized I hadn't understood things I'd seen in my friends' relationships or my relationships before. I called them different things. So long story short, in a few weeks later, they were like, why don't you come be the CEO? And that's partly because I had been the CEO of the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and they didn't know a lot of people who had experience running and building a nonprofit, but it is like the greatest honor to do this work because we're truly walking into it. It's an information gap that can be filled and that most everybody wants to be filled because we want our friends to be safe. We want our families. We want healthy relationships. I don't think there's people out there who say, I want unhealthy, abusive relationships. Like, that's precisely zero people. Like, even people who are abusive, they may not realize they're abusive. We've had so many people in our workshops say, oh my gosh, I've done some of these things. Well, that's the newsflash we want people to have, because then you can start working on it. Yeah. Sorry if that was too long.
No, that was wonderful. Thank you.
I actually remember watching that film. I think it was my junior year of college, and just kind of just paying attention to the room and how we all just got so quiet. And even afterwards, just like thinking about that film and just what it covered for a long time afterward. And also like forced me to go back in my history and look at, you know, my past relationships, whether they were healthy or not. And I just think that's so important because I think sometimes we take for granted what a healthy relationship is. And even if you, not everyone has access to an example of it. And even if you do, you may not even know how to participate as a partner in a relationship. And that was just like something I had never,
I guess. Well, we're not taught, right? I mean, as you think about it, it's like, we've realized since we started doing this work, I mean, our primary goal is to save people's lives. Like, we did the escalation workshop in the UVA women's lacrosse locker room around the 5-year anniversary of her death, which was one of the most emotional experiences ever. You know, her locker is still marked with her one above it. And that's where our name comes from, is her last name's Love and her number was one. And the lights went on afterwards. And I just had this feeling from head to toe that if her team had been in the room during this workshop, somebody would have said, we got a problem. Like, there's a problem. And I think that overwhelming feeling, you know, realizing we could help people and maybe save lives and then ultimately change attitudes and change norms and change statistics. But what we've started to realize, when you look at the research, relationship health is actually a root cause issue. So the health of our relationships impacts our mental health. It impacts our physical health. It impacts social outcomes. So if you think about the importance of healthy relationships, how are we not teaching this in a standardized way early on? And yeah, you can't guarantee, not everybody comes from a healthy family. Even in healthy families, there's a lot of dysfunction. Where is like the standardized way, the standard language that we can teach young people by, so they have a common language with each other? And so that's really what we've created over time. We started with films, and then we really anchored the films to our 10 signs of healthy and unhealthy relationships, because we realized that people do see the signs, but they usually code them in emotion, not in words, in how it makes them feel. Are they scared? Do they feel hurt? Are they insulted? When really they need to know it's belittling, or it's manipulation, or it's whatever it is, but you need to give them a word. You need to teach what the word is. And our vision is, if every kid had the same language for talking about relationship health, that would take us way far down the road towards progress in a bunch of different areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, I come from a culture tradition. I was born in Zimbabwe, and our culture traditionally does not talk a lot about dating, a lot about relationships. It's you know, maybe in some sense, being a Christian country, it's kind of a preservation thing. And, you know, my parents have a great relationship. And so I watch and I emulate, but then there's the gaps of, okay, but what do I do about dating? Like, how do I go about getting a boyfriend? How do I find the right boyfriend? So I'm asking my sister, I'm asking my cousins, but as I've gone through different things and gone through different phases, like, I want for myself to really understand, okay, what does a healthy relationship look like actually? And how do I pursue building that with someone? Because it's almost like, when I look back, I'm like, it's common sense. Like, I should have known disrespect is not healthy. Like, cheating, lying is not healthy. But to then try to navigate that and understand, how do I verbalize these things? It's just like, it's things that I would be like, oh, like, I should have known, you know, but I didn't have the language and the way to express the things that were happening, and then how to navigate and leave that situation much sooner. So I think what you mentioned about having like a universal language, or just helping people understand how to verbalize and how to identify certain things, it just saves so much strain.
Yeah. I mean, I hear everything that you just said there. First of all, you shouldn't have known. I mean, if you knew how many people I talked to say, I should have known, like abuse or unhealthy relationships we think there's a zone in between unhealthy behaviors and abusive relationships. And a lot of people have been in that zone, right? A lot of people so we're trying to teach there, because if you can teach what the unhealthy behaviors are and you can teach people to recognize that when they become a pattern that could become abuse, then they're likely to catch the early signs that most often you miss. So I always say that abusive relationships totally sneak up on you. Like it starts, you're adored, you're whisked off your feet. This is so exciting. This is what people have told you loves about and this, that, and the other. And you ignore the signs like, I am sort of missing seeing my friends, or I don't like that he checks my texts or she checks my texts when I get up from my phone, because they tease you about it and say, oh, I just love you. I just want to make sure you're not talking to that guy I saw you talking to, or whatever it is. We ignore those signs instead of having language to be like, listen, like, I know this might sound strange to talk about, but like boundaries are really important to me. My phone is my phone. Like, and that doesn't mean I don't like you. Doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to trust me. I don't want, you know, but it opens up conversations that we are not comfortable having. So I think that's a really important part of what we're trying to do. And what we've realized, we're moving younger and younger in what we do, because these 10 signs actually are the 10 signs of healthy and unhealthy in every relationship. Mm-hmm. So if we can teach middle schoolers the 10 signs around friendship, and get them accustomed to naming the behavior and role playing through how they could respond to that and practicing words, then by the time you're dating, our hope is that this becomes second nature, right? And that you've educated a whole generation of kids in a different way with a different skill set to talk about something that most of us feel like awkward or ill-equipped to talk about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you guys are educating younger too, because even when I think about, you know, the curriculum and when I was in school, either in health class or in like sex education, it was just very much like, how do you physically protect yourself, but never like the interactions with people. And I mean, even in this country, not every, you know, school is guaranteed sex education. So like, how long do you think it'll be before this becomes built in to like primary schooling?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, that it'll be a while. I mean, I think that, so from a sex education standpoint, it's controversial because it starts to dip in, and you mentioned you're raised in a Christian country, you know, it becomes a like values or cultural norms thing. And we are very, especially in this country, we have strong views about what's appropriate or not appropriate to teach our kids. Now, the research very clearly shows that the more sex education, the better, that kids make healthier decisions with better information. So the data is pretty clear, but that data doesn't necessarily get us over our beliefs and our quote unquote values. I do think relationship health education is really interesting because it can, you know, we don't teach quote unquote the birds and the bees. We don't teach about contraception. Do we address issues around consent? Yes, but consent is not just about sexual relationships. Consent is about boundaries, and it's much broader than just around sex. But learning about consent is absolutely critical. Relationship health is a lot more tied with like social emotional learning. And people are definitely making the connection more and more in the classroom as kids' mental health challenges rise, that relationship health is one core element of mental health. So I do think for relationship health, we have a vision one day of every kid learning about relationship health in their schools. Mm-hmm. That might be easier to mandate because it's a little bit less charged from a quote unquote values perspective. We hope so. I mean, we think that this is information. I love what you said actually about you saw the film and you kept thinking about it. So that's, I think, the power of film versus like a slideshow. I think when you participate, you watch it, you're sort of analyzing the film, thinking about your life, and then you sit in a circle and you talk about the film. But we know films stick with us. Powerful films stick with us. And the sad thing about these issues is that we get plenty of reminders in the media we consume and the situations we see every day where we're like, oh, that was like in that film Escalation. Oh, that was like in that One Love program. But that's not such a bad thing because it helps reinforce the learning versus it having been a one and done that you left behind the second you left the classroom. So one of the directions we're probably going to go in the future is actually, you know, we love our facilitated workshops. That's the bread and butter of what we do. But if we care about equity and accessibility, 96% of young people have a phone. So even if we can't get into the schools, how do we figure out how to educate on the phone? Yeah. So any kid who wants to take a One Love course can do so. And that's one step towards getting involved and taking and going down this path. So that's sort of the next frontier for us.
Yeah, that's amazing. Something that I've been thinking a lot about too is, so I love a romantic comedy, y'all. I love a Lifetime movie, a Hallmark movie. Yes, the holiday specials. But as I've watched them, I start to think more and more about, okay, like, how is this influencing the way that I view relationships? How's the books I'm reading, the movies? I think there was a Netflix film that came out maybe a year or 2 years ago, and there was a post that y'all did and talked about. And I had noticed, like, the guy would do some things that were maybe kind of questionable, but it was like, no, it's cute. Like, he's fighting for love. And then y'all put this amazing blog post together and you're like, listen, this is, you know, what's not necessarily acceptable for a healthy relationship. And that was mind blowing. That was really the first time, like, reading y'all's blog post, I was like, wait a minute. Yes. Like, this is what I've been trying to understand and verbalize. And so I'm curious, like, how you view the way that media and literature impact the way that we view love and maybe how it's kind of unhealthy in some aspects.
Oh yeah, like all the narratives are, you know, the narratives that really shape all of us, these like archetypal stories, I don't know, like that we do not realize how much we have absorbed them by the time that we're starting to date. Yeah. And add to that a layer of, I would say in the media, there is really like, if you look at, especially like, let's just talk about reality TV, the amount of emotionally toxic and unhealthy behavior that goes on. And that's just like part of the norm, or it's sort of funny, or we laugh about it. Like, I think about us, like, we're absorbing all that. So that's changing our norms and our sense, all of these things for what's normal, what's right, what's to be expected.
Right.
My favorite, I have four kids, and I remember, you know, my daughter loved Beauty and the Beast. And at one point when she was like eight, I said, listen, I just have to tell you this. If somebody ever whisks you away, steals you away from your parent, locks you in a dungeon, yells at you, rages at you, tells you what to wear, you know, they will never turn into a prince. They will never turn into a prince. It's not going to happen. And my 7-year-old was like, sheesh, you know, like, but I do think we have so many opportunities, and we hear from some of the young people that we teach that they end up in media, like seeing the signs and mentally noting, oh, that's not healthy. Actually, once they have the framework, I have a deep belief that people have the ability to learn. Once we always used to say, it's like putting a pair of glasses on. Like once you read that blog post, you couldn't unsee it, right? There's a scene, you could not unsee it. And that's part of the goal. You know, in fact, one of the tools that my team put together over quarantine was a workshop that's not based on a film we created, but it's based on pop culture. And it's a pop culture workshop on the 10 signs. It's like one of our most downloaded tools on our education center. Mm-hmm. So we have opportunities all around us to learn and to observe and to change our frame, but we need the language and we need the lens to look through, I guess, I would say.
For sure. It's so funny you mentioned Beauty and the Beast. So when I was little, Sleeping Beauty was my movie, like watch it all the time till the VHS was just run down. But then now I think about it, I'm like, why was he in the woods kissing? A little questionable, you know, we go shelf that. It's a little questionable, but I think that is important to learn. And you know, I look at what my younger cousins are watching now and learning now. And, you know, we mentioned consent a little bit, but she doesn't have to hug anyone if she doesn't want to hug them. And like, that is, I love that. Like, I'll say, you know, oh, do you want to hug? She's like, no. Okay. Do you want to high five? Yeah. Okay, cool. We high five. Like, very much normal. And those are the conversations, like you said, that we want to continue and just like teaching early, because even now, like sometimes I don't want to hug everyone. I don't know, but I feel bad. But like, I don't really want to hug that day. So for them, it's not even a feel bad situation. It's like, this is my body and this is what I want to do.
Well, and I think also just as women, I mean, I don't know if you guys will relate to this, but I think there is a cultural value placed on like sort of being pleasing and accommodating. Like, and I think that that is really confining. I mean, I think that the number of times that we make a decision that's wrong for us because we don't want to make somebody uncomfortable or say the wrong thing, I think we have to start openly talking about, that's not necessarily what One Love teaches, but as a parent, I think about it all the time. And even the best parents in the world, like you really have to intentionally choose not to follow some of these things that we've done forever. Like, go hug that person, go hug them, or you're gonna be in trouble, like, or whatever it is. Because we fall back into it because it's surrounded us our whole lives. So it takes practice, I guess is what I would say. I mean, I would say, even though I do this for a living, I literally swim in this topic of healthy and unhealthy relationships all day, every day. I still do unhealthy things. Nobody is perfect. Perfect is not the goal. What the goal is mindful and intentional and committed to practicing. I think the thing I've gotten better at in this work, I hate conflict. I'm not that good at healthy conflict. But I realize how important it is, and that a healthy relationship can have healthy conflict, not like destructive conflict or intense or volatile conflict. So once you know it, and you know not only what you might be struggling with in a relationship with the other person, but what you struggle with, then you just have to commit to practicing it. And over time, the more of us are practicing, I think the better the quality of our relationships will be. The more, you know, people always ask me, like, what if you see a sign of an unhealthy relationship? Like, what do you do? Do you break up with them? What do you do? You know, you start a conversation, you know, and that's the stuff we have to build our muscles around, because that's awkward. But like the boundaries conversation, or the, you know, very frequent conversation when you first start seeing somebody, is like, what's the comfortable pace for both of you? Mm-hmm. And I think this is like frequent, it's not just women, but sometimes people feel rushed along. Mm-hmm. And teaching young people to be able to say, listen, I really like you, but I just need to slow down a little bit. And have that be accepted and okay, and viewed as like a really important first conversation you're having, versus like, oh, I'm embarrassed, I'm ashamed, like whatever it is. Like, we just have to take some of that shame away. Mm-hmm. So that we teach kids early how to have the conversations that equip them to have healthier relationships.
Yeah, I connected with so much of what you said. just to start off, even with talking about, like, for me as a woman, I've noticed that, like, I will sometimes put other people's comfort above my own, even if I'm in a situation. I think sometimes it takes me a while to kind of process what's happening, and then also to be afraid that, like, in order to stay true to my comfort level, I might make someone else feel bad or awkward. And then also in, like, having these conversations, or just like learning to communicate with people, I've learn to move through, like, my own shame around questionable situations and speak with friends. And then I think us not, like, because not everything is, you know, like, black and white. There's a lot of gray, and I think sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind, your brain around how other people react to situations. But I feel like even in moving through my own shame with stuff, I've had friends who have maybe not understood the situation, but then come back and said, I listened to what you said, and that made me rethink other situations in my life. And just seeing kind of like that open communication. And even just like looking at the numbers before coming into this conversation, these unhealthy relationships, abusive relationships, are very common based on these numbers.
Yep.
And so, like, if it's so common, I guess I'm just confused why as a culture we don't talk about it more. Because if 1 in 3 women, 1 in 4 men, and even it's common in, you know, I think I read a statistic that it was like 54% of transgender people, they have abuse, they've experienced abusive relationships. So I'm wondering, why isn't it just like a normal to talk about?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I think the easiest, the way I think about it is, nobody wants to think they're being abused or that they're an abuser. Like, the words we use matter. So though, just like nobody wants to be a bully or think their friend's a bully, so they make excuses so that it doesn't fit into that category. And it might just be excuses in their own head, but this excuse making is a really big part of the problem. And it's actually, when it comes to abusive relationships, if you're really in an abusive relationship, your partner will be sowing seeds of doubt in you every step of the way. If you say, I really didn't like the way you blew up at me, they'll be like, I only did that because you did this. So that makes you feel like I just talked to somebody last night who's like, they're making me feel crazy. Like, everything that they're making me feel crazy. Like, they do this, I say something, and they tell me it's my fault. So that sows all this doubt and confusion. And I do think another thing to point out, it's not black and white, because abusive relationships can go up and down. I think abusive relationships, there's a lot of push-pull. The abusive person really likes control, and they push the person away, but then they pull them back in. And it's like, everybody wants it to be like it was at the beginning when it was wonderful. And I also think another piece of it is, this excuse making, like I was just drunk, or, you know, some people struggle with partners who have mental health issues who blame their mental health problem, or I grew up in a family where X. There's always excuses that mean you don't call it abuse. But I will tell you, when we started doing this work with escalation, we were teaching about abusive relationships. What we realized is if we went into a classroom, like say we went in to teach you, if we were talking about abuse, half the room would shut down because they just say it's not relevant to me. I would never be in an abusive relationship. We like create these walls and think that it happens to somebody else. As soon as we took the same film, same discussion guide, and just talked about healthy and unhealthy relationships, everybody's like, oh, I need to learn more. Like the language we use matters. So I think the reason that the stats are incredible. I mean, you're right. Over 1 in 3 women, nearly 1 in 3 men, 1 in 2 trans or non-binary folks will be in an abusive relationship. A fair number of those are emotionally abusive relationships. We have done a really bad job as a society, and that's what we're trying to do with the 10 signs, at defining what that is. I remember when I took this job and I said those stats, people would say, well, what kind of abuse? And I would say physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. And some people would say, what's emotional abuse? Like it's a soft topic. But actually the research shows that emotional abuse can take a longer mental health toll on a person than physical abuse, believe it or not. And the emotional abuse signs are the ones we miss. So we miss isolation. We miss, you know, possessiveness or extreme jealousy. We miss sabotage. And by the time all those emotionally abusive things, we fall down a rabbit hole and we start thinking we're crazy and we lose the ability to self-advocate. And then we're isolated from our friends and it can get worse. So that's why we really believe like teaching this emotional piece, this emotionally healthy and unhealthy behaviors is the right intervention point. Because if you can spot the things early and learn to have conversations at that spot, maybe you keep people from going down the rabbit hole. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, you did. And it also kind of goes into another question I had, is that I feel like sometimes when people talk about like abuse or unhealthy relationships, their mind immediately goes to like physical abuse. And so if it's not in that category, then it can't constitute like unhealthy. And I was just wondering if you could even speak more to just like how layered these forms of unhealthy abusive relationships can be.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to say about If I had a dollar for every time somebody has said to me, I mean, he hasn't hit me. It comes back to like, it's not an excuse, but it's a way of defining real abuse from just like not real abuse. And I'm not trying to belittle anyone, but it's, we have this line that's where it's really bad. But anyone who has been in an emotionally abusive relationship will tell you that it's really bad. It's really bad to just be in a place where you have an intense partner who's extremely possessive, who really doesn't ask your opinion on anything, doesn't take responsibility for anything, betrays you. I mean, and by the way, like I'm not a teenager or 20 something anymore, but those were the hallmarks of my relationships in my teens and 20s, right? Those are like core parts of that's what you're trying to navigate. These are sort of the norm. And I think that's what we have to challenge ourselves with, is just, should it be the norm? Should it be the norm? And I think the answer is it shouldn't. And I think that the layers, it's all a cycle. The reason escalation is powerful is it shows how it starts great. You miss the early signs, you're in deeper than you thought and you can't get out. And you don't even know how deep you're in. So I think that if we can teach kids to understand that progression and not see like, well, they've never hit me here, but see, it's all part of a continuum. I think that's really important. And again, you can do that in the context of friendships too, where it's actually safer. There's very markedly fewer people who kill each other or hurt each other in volatile friendships. I mean, it happens, don't get me wrong, but like, it's not 1 in 3, 1 in 3, 1 in 2, right? It's it's different. The stakes are a little lower. But if we can get young people if you think about like Mean Girls, for example, like we get primed in middle school that like our best, there's like a meanness to even some of our best friends. So if that's what we're learning through our friendships, what else are we going to expect when we get into our dating relationships? That the closest people to us betray us or don't accept responsibility or sabotage us. So we just got to like turn the whole thing on its head. And I would say the other thing we have to do is engage more men in these conversations. So this is completely, this is an issue that's been marginalized as a women's issue. It is not a women's issue. It is a human issue. I think that men are, you know, there are many male advocates out there who will stand up if they're taught and speak. There's also men who want to be healthier in their relationships. I mean, we believe all people can love better. This is not like some people can love better. All people can love better, but you need to have the skills and you need to know how to practice. So what we want to turn on the head is like this idea that there's bad abuse and like not so good. And then we want to say, this is not a women's issue. This is a human's issue. And we all can take part.
And something I was wondering too, you know, how would you advise someone who maybe feels either shame or like uncertainty about how to address their current relationship or move away from the relationship they're in when they realize, okay, this isn't necessarily going how it should be for my mental or physical health?
Definitely. Well, I'll tell you the first thing, and I literally was on the phone with someone last night. The first thing I always say is, listen, you need to just let go of all shame or all like, how did I get here? Like, how am I so stupid? That little narrative. This is so common. The stats speak for them. This is like a very common thing. And I've had this conversation with a million other people. So I always say that to people, like, you are not alone. This is like very common. I really encourage people. Are you asking from a friend's perspective? Or are you asking from somebody in a relationship?
I think someone in a relationship. And then we can also touch on the friend part too.
So I think, so this person I talked to last night sent me, I know someone they know, and she said, you should call Katie. In the text she sent to me, she said, I think I've reached the point where this is not good for me for my mental health or my health generally, but I don't think I can do it alone. So I think there's a lot in that statement to think about, and it really gives you the perspective of somebody who's been in an unhealthy relationship. Part of what abusive folks do is they isolate you from your friends and family. And that's probably the thing I misunderstood the most. Like when I think back to college or grad school, my girlfriends who would like only then go with their boyfriends or their partners, and they would like forget their friends. So we all blamed the girl, right? Our friend. We were like, oh, she's that kind of person. When in truth, in many of these relationships, that's actually what's required by the partner. The partner is actively saying like, why do you hang out with them? I want to be with you all the time. Let's go do our own thing, you know? And so what happens over time, and you can think, I can think about some of those friendships in my life, is I just stopped trying with my friend. It's like, whatever, she's going to be with him. Well, that's cutting off a really important lifeline. That's the only way to talk about it. So I think the first thing that you need to do, you're probably a little isolated. You're probably super insecure. You probably feel like you're crazy. Like this person said to me last night, I feel like I'm going crazy. You need to pick one person to talk to. One person. Might be a person who was your best friend that you're not in good touch with. It might be your boss. It might be you have to talk to one person, because that one person, and if you're that one person that somebody picks, you need to listen. You need to validate. You need to not criticize the partner. You need to criticize the behavior. And you need to talk about safety planning. Like you need to upfront, time of breakup is the most dangerous time. Now, maybe this is a super dangerous relationship. Maybe it's not. Either way, you got to put that public service announcement out there. Like, I don't know your partner, but if you've decided that you need to leave, you need to come up with a plan and not just leave erratically. And part of the plan is sharing with people. Part of the plan is letting people know and having people look out for you. So I think my number one recommendation for anyone is, one, trust your gut. Your gut was given to you for a reason. And we are trained to so many times through our adolescence to ignore the gut and just go with what the group wants. We got to like flip that a little bit. But then you have to tell one person and you have to ask that one person for help. And again, this is why we have to train non-experts to know what to do and to know what the resources are. So for this person I talked to last night, you know, I said, you can call me anytime that you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do. That's another really important thing. Friends sometimes will, like, if you're talking to a friend and you're starting to have these feelings, first of all, most of the time, if you have a friend come to you and start to tell you some of her concerns about or his concerns about their relationship, they will not tell you the full story. So just know that you're going to get a choice little selection of examples. And if you keep listening and you keep the line open, you will probably hear more. But they need to learn they can trust you, and they need to learn that you're not going to do what their partner has probably been doing, which is tell them what to do. So you're not going to say you need to break up with that person because they are bad news. You need to talk about that must make you feel awful. I totally understand why you feel out of control. Let me know how I can help. I love you unconditionally. I'm always here. That's the tone if you're the friend. But for if you're the person in it, trust your gut and tell one person. That would be my advice.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I thinking of what you mentioned about if a friend is hanging out more with the boyfriend, right? Like I'm sure we've all been part of the conversation, like, oh, y'all, she does not want to see us anymore. She's always with him. Like, okay, I guess we'll just go out by ourselves. But then I think back after the fact when those friends come back and they're like, yeah, he was checking my Snapchat, he was checking my text, and I'm like, oh shit, like I had no idea. But exactly. In our minds, it's like, oh no, our friend doesn't want to hang out with us anymore. She's just so infatuated with this person. And that makes me sad, but also like makes me glad that one, that friend is safe. But now I am finding and learning and identifying tools to help in the event that that happens again, or to just like make sure I'm checking in with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we try to teach. So the other thing that happens a lot now that thank God I didn't have to deal with when I was growing up is like the positive affirmations you get on social when you're in a relationship. So people will, oh, hashtag relationship goals, you know, whatever it is, whatever the thing of today is. And that provides a disincentive for someone to tell you straight what's going on in your relationship. Yeah. So when you just say, you guys are so cute, I'm never going to meet somebody like that, whatever the language is, like, I'm so jealous. Look at the better thing to do when your friends start seeing somebody, not just when you have concerns, but just in general, is just like check in with them. Like you said, say like, how's it going? Like, what do you guys like to do together? Like, does he treat you well? Like, what's your favorite? You know, be curious. Don't just make assumptions based on what people are posting on their social media. Cause we all know like social media is most of the time, you know, the picture perfect version of what we want our lives to be, not what the reality is. So your job as a friend, well, I think that's a lot of what we want to teach young people is what is your job as a friend? And it's to not make assumptions that they don't like you anymore. It's not to make assumptions that they're in this perfect thing and they left you behind. It's to say like, I want to keep the line of communication open and I want to be a resource. And I would want the friends, my friend, to do the same. One thing that in the early days of One Love, people used to say coming out of escalation, like, what can I do? I really love this idea of really saying to one person in a friend, I want to give you permission. If you ever have a concern about one of my relationships, I will listen to you without being defensive. I will listen to you and I hope I can do the same for you. If we can establish that in advance of a problem, I think it's so much easier because once there's a problem, the emotions are high and nobody really knows what to do. So I think if people can do that with their friends and establish early on, this is part of our responsibility to each other and it's part of our friendship, I think that would go a long way.
For sure. Yeah, shout out to the homies. Shout out to all the friends out there. Always have your back. Oh, the best. And siblings and cousins and friends and everyone.
Exactly.
I mean, I have a question based off of that. You may have already covered it, but if you haven't already established that end, because if I don't know, I feel like sometimes even with like friends, I've found myself in situations where I've seen things that seem odd to me, but I've noticed how they've responded when other people have brought them up. And it's kind of like the relationship becomes this thing that you can't talk about, or it feels like you might lose them. And so how do you keep that line of communication? Like, how do you kind of like establish that if it's already like, you're already
there's a couple things there. One of them is, if they're in an unhealthy, very unhealthy or abusive relationship, you can be almost 100% sure that their partner is saying to them things like, your friends are totally ridiculous. Your friends are totally against us. Your family, they are trying to sow seeds of doubt. If you have that context, then you understand why when a friend says something, the person gets defensive because she's already been told or he's been told by his partner, they're trying to break us up, right? That's one thing to have in mind. So when you see that response, know that it's partly because of what they're being told by their partner. The second thing is if you see that, one of the most powerful things is not necessarily only like the one-to-one conversation, but when you see a friend say, I didn't like the way that he like shut you down or she shut you down in that conversation, and then that person gets shut down, go talk to that friend who made the observation. Say, I heard you say that. Like, I'm seeing some things too. I think friends connecting the dots, in too many cases, different people see different things because they don't know how to talk about it and they're not sure who to go to. They don't sort of find each other. But if you have real concerns, don't be afraid to reach out. And then as friends, decide what you're going to do together. We had an example a few years ago at a college of friends who saw something at a party. They went to someone else that they knew was a One Love facilitator. They shared what they saw. She gathered the friends the next day. They had gathered other friends from the dorm. We've seen these things. And the friends collectively made the decision to call this person's parents. So that might seem like a lot, but it was the consequence of friends talking about what they're seeing, finding each other, having a language, and then having confidence that it was serious enough they needed to do something. So again, I think that, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to get shut down. I do think it helps. You have to remember that when I think about abuse, I think we tend to think about it black or white, but it's not really. And I think of it as like really sick love, like really sick love. But there is love there, and there is caring there. And that's what, when you're on the outside looking in, you're like, what the heck is this? But to the person in it, and frequently, I think the biggest misconception I've faced over time in this work is that abusive people are insecure or somehow they have low self-esteem. That might be a consequence of emotional abuse. But my experience is a lot of people who end up in abusive relationships are actually like pretty competent, and they're helpers, and they want to help this person, their partner, you know, with whatever they're going through. And they think they're tough enough to do it on their own, and they can take it. And sometimes that backfires, you know? So I think it's important to remember when you're approaching a friend, don't criticize the person, talk about the behavior. Where you can show empathy, you know, or that you've experienced it too. I was in a relationship once where I couldn't get a word in edgewise, and it just made me feel small. Like, put yourself in, like, show that it's not just them. And if they shut you down, say, listen, all I need you to know is that I care a lot about you. I want you to be happy, and I'm always here for you. Close on the positive. Don't take it personally if they shut you down, and then just keep reaching out. And I think that's what I would say.
That was helpful.
Yeah, I mean,
shout out to taking all the mental notes right now.
That's amazing. And I think that society, at least from my perspective, sometimes it's like, oh, I'm just going to mind my own business. Like, I don't want to poke my nose in people's business. But then that person might just not know how to ask for help or be ashamed or embarrassed or be like, oh, that's just how he acts. But if, like you said, if collectively the whole group or a couple of people notice something that's a pattern, even if maybe they can't help themselves, looping in a family member that, you know, that person trusts, or a resource like a One Love coordinator. You know, I went to Sewanee, and we have a women's center, and like the women's center does a lot of great work, not only just for women, it's named Women's Center, but right. Helps anyone on campus. You know, where even if it maybe is a little bit above your comfortability, I've seen that just having someone that I can go to and say, hey, like, I saw this happen with this person. Like, let's just check in on them. Like, I know you're equipped to be able to help them. And, you know, being able to share the online resources that you have, things through the phone, like workshops. I was on a workshop, I think last year, maybe y'all hosted a workshop with the PLL that I really wanted to touch on. It's somewhere in my mentions or in my DMs. It was emotional regulation workshop. And it was One Love, Scott Ratliff, and Marcus Holman were part of it, and facilitated by One Love. But I just really loved those things because I think we touched on a lot of really important topics in that too. So just continuing, like, making the dots of all the different things I'm learning and who to go to and how to ask questions to get even more resources and help people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that our great hope is that we can really establish that. So first of all, it has to be coded as relationship health, because that's a language people can hear. That's a language people want to be part of. It's a conversation people want to be part of. And so teaching about healthy and unhealthy relationships is really important, because most people will say every time, abuse wouldn't happen to me, even if it's happening. I think our dream is that relationship health becomes something that, like, everybody knows, like, this is important. Like, this is part of, like, this is something that's important to me as a friend, as a family member, as a person with romantic interests. Like, this is like a pillar of my life. And then our great hope, when we talk about what we want One Love to be, we want One Love to be like your trusted best friend. It's a no judgment zone. Like, there's no shame at One Love. Everybody can love better. 100% of us will be in unhealthy relationships. 100% of us will do unhealthy things. Nobody's perfect. This is not black or white. This is about the whole, all of us have something to learn here. And our hope is that, you know, we can build resources that you can pick from that work for where you are right now. And you can find our Ed Center now is really searchable. So if you're looking for specific information on how to help a friend, you can go search that in now and find a bunch of resources that may be helpful, because we think this is truly an issue every person needs. Like this education is education everybody needs, because it's what's most complex about human beings compared to other animals is our relationships. Like, and learning how to navigate them in a healthy way versus an unhealthy way is just a no-brainer when it comes to life. So, you know, when I think about Yardley, I mean, yesterday was the 11-year anniversary of her death, which is not a happy anniversary, it's a tragic one. But when I think about the millions and millions and millions of conversations that have started out of it, and I say this like with zero arrogance, this needed to happen. And, you know, Yardley, you guys were lacrosse players, so you probably have some familiarity with her story, right? And the lacrosse community does. But if you know how many people remember what the day they heard that Yardley Love was killed, because it was like so unimaginable. It was like the most unimaginable thing. And the media covered her story. And, you know, you don't expect that coming from the lacrosse community. You don't expect that coming from Division I players. You don't, we have stereotypes around race and domestic violence. Like, and they're not, you know, her story resonated, which gave her family and this organization the opportunity to try to break through and start a conversation that we know has changed and saved people's lives and can continue to do that on a go forward basis. So I think about her all the time, just so you know. I'm pretty sure like she's up in heaven working her magic to try to get us all on board with this and do what she can, because we are fighting an uphill battle. We're fighting our fear of these issues, and we're fighting stigma around intervening, and we're fighting normalization of bad stuff, but it's got to happen. It's time. The numbers are big enough. We all benefit. And so I'm just thrilled that you guys are helping to shine a light on it. And I'm so grateful for the time with you guys today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll link all the amazing resources that you can provide, and hopefully be able to continue collaborating to host clinics or workshops to just talk, because I think this is so important. And for anyone listening, joinonelove.org is where you can find out more information, donate, sign up for workshops. But yeah, Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my gosh, it was awesome to be with you guys. Thank you.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.